And you're listening to the podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
The Supreme Court is now stepping in, allowing President Trump's entire restriction on visas, you remember his travel ban, to be enforced now. With two noted dissents, the court's blocking a lower court ruling that had said that it could not be enforced against a close family members of people inside the United States. So the Supreme Court allowing this to go forward now. You remember the president had said that this was not a quote-unquote Muslim ban or discriminatory in any way, and the president has broad discretion to take action to control who can come into the United States and who can't. The critics of this travel ban said that it was discriminatory based on religion and points of national origin. All of that's been hashed out in the courts, and now a win here today for the president.
Hello?
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
From the PAC Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here is your host, the submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons calling, you have permission to fire.
Have permission to fire, con weapons on.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things are happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So, perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity. Travel bans, First Amendment free speech, the Supreme Court, and humanity. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, I had a show prepped. I really did. And about 7 o'clock this morning, it went out the window. So, you know where we got to go, because we got to go there. So, we're going to go there. Here's how you get a hold of me. Area code 209-565-DAVE. Is the text machine and the voicemail machine. That's 209-565-3283. Telephone and, well, text machine and voicemail. Email is Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Eloqui comitio. Greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Well, like I said, I had a great show prepped all this morning. I knew I was going to be sleeping in this morning, and so I intentionally over-prepped last night. And it's odd because at the end of the day, the basic theme will remain the same, although the stories around it obviously changed. Instead of talking about Federalist 57 and Congress and some other doohickey things, we'll be talking about the Supreme Court of the United States, which today issued two rulings so far. I think that's all they issued today, right? I've got this ringing in my ears, and I'm not sure where it's coming from. Anyway, they issued a couple of rulings that we'll be talking about this morning. Obviously, the Trump travel ban ruling. And then there's another ruling out of California, which is also equally interesting, I think, in the broader spectrum of things. And those are the two things that have people chattering today. It would have been such a good show. It's a great story out of Washington, D.C., out of Congress about what a bunch of Congress people are trying to do. And at any rate, the point is we keep electing these bozos and we keep electing the same people over and over again. And yet, the same people who are going to vote for their congressman because they always have are the same people that are posting on their social media about we need term limits because they're apparently too unaware of the fact that we already have them. They just don't use them. That's what it comes down to. So there you have it. At any rate, the Supreme Court this morning issued its ruling in Trump v. Hawaii, which is otherwise known as Trump Travel Ban 3.0. Now, many of you will recall this argument that we have had literally since the day the president was inaugurated as to whether or not his travel ban, which he talked about while he was on the campaign, is a Muslim ban or a travel ban. And we have dissected this discussion, this travel ban, to the nth degree. We have gone down into this thing and talked about whether or not it is legit, whether it's not. And we argued the law. We actually went into the United States Code and we looked at, what is it, 8 code, got the number right here in front of me, and I had scrolled down, 8 U.S. Code 1182, and we talked about the subparagraphs and some of the issues that are involved here. And we said, well, clearly, according to this, the president has power. We did an entire episode about plenary power that the president says that he has and that other presidents have said that they have. And then we went back to the fact that the president made a habit of tweeting his opinion about things, making public statements both on the campaign and after the campaign as to what he was actually doing. And therein lied the lower court's ruling, which was that there was clear anti-Muslim animus in the statements that the president was making, and consequently that made the entire thing invalid because you can't denigrate somebody's religion and then apply the laws against them. It's not the way things work, right? So the ruling comes out this morning and it's 5-4. To me, what that says is it's 4-4 with Justice Kennedy really making the decision 1-0, because Justice Kennedy is generally considered a swing vote. I think that does him a disjustice. I'm making up words this morning. I think that does him a disservice. I think it's not true to what he really does. What he really is a libertarianish justice who tends to favor liberty over anything else. He tends to find in those directions. And so I think some people were a little surprised, and I think other people were not. But the fact that Justice Kennedy also takes this time to write his own opinion about this, in which he literally goes off on a tangent about what happened. So some years ago, I was a jurist in a criminal trial. Through circumstances that I really couldn't control, I ended up becoming the jury foreman of this trial, which lasted, as I recall, 4 days. It was a domestic violence case. A guy hit his girlfriend and his baby mama, and made terroristic threats, which in California, which is where I was at the time, was a crime. I don't know if you knew that or not. You can't make terroristic threats. And if you're going to make terroristic threats, you sure as hell don't want to do it on tape. Okay. So this genius left a message saying, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And of course the defense's argument was, well, the tape isn't clear. You can't really hear it. That was the defense's argument. The defense actually put on the girlfriend as a character witness of the guy that had hit her. Okay. So we have this tape. We have the witnesses. We have the police reports. We have all of this stuff. And then they put this gal on the stand and she says, oh no, it was all a mistake. I love him. And off we go. After the case was over, kind of an interesting thing. I don't know if you knew this or not, but sometimes the attorneys will come out and talk to the jurors. I think they're kind of fishing. I think they're kind of hoping that they'll find some evidence of bias or something that, is there. And I had an opportunity to talk to both the district attorney who was handling the case and the defense attorney. And I got to be honest, I sat through 4 days of this trial, and everything was set piece predictable. I mean, it really was. From the objections about how the jury was formed, to the girlfriend on the stand, to the argument that the tape isn't clear, I'm going to kill you, isn't clear. It isn't clear what he means, let alone what he says. And after the whole thing was done, was walking down the hall and the defense attorney, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, sure. So we sat down on the bench and he started asking me some pointed questions about, well, was there any bias towards the race of the defendant? Was there this? Was it that? And of course, it wasn't any of that. And I, after a few moments, he was, and I got to be honest, I don't feel like he put his best effort into it. I really don't. But when everything was said and done, he said, so why do you think we lost? What is it that convinced you that he did it? And I said to him, quite honestly, it was putting his girlfriend on the stand because it was so obvious that she was lying. If I had been you, I would not have put her on the stand. And I started dissecting his case for him. I wouldn't have put her on the stand. Or if she was on the stand, I would have attacked her as a hostile witness. You're just doing this because you're trying to control him, aren't you? You're making this whole thing up. But he didn't. He was like, oh, you just eliciting questions about, oh, I love him. And she, of course, she got destroyed on cross-examination on all this. We shook hands and we left, and that was the end of that. If you were to read Justice Kennedy's concurrence today, you're going to find a lot of that. You're going to find a lot of, if you guys had done this in your case, if you had done this in your argument, if you had gone this direction instead, then we'd be talking about a totally different thing, but you didn't. You focused on unconstitutionality. You focused on anti-Muslim animus. You focused on things that weren't really addressing the depth of what you were trying to say. And if I were you, this is probably how I would have done it, is how Justice Kennedy's concurrence comes across. Now, again, I've only skimmed these. I haven't read them in depth. Frankly, there wasn't, I literally only had 2 hours from the time I got up to the time the show started. And I've got a, 7-year-old son, 8-year-old son who had to be fed breakfast. Got a wife coming home from work. I got a lot of stuff going on, folks. It's a busy day. Plus, frankly, I had already prepped my show. So when I woke up initially, I was like, well, I'm good to go. And it was a good half hour before I turned on the news and it went, oh, well, there goes that, which was immediately followed by a text from Pat the lawyer saying, show prep went out the window, huh? Yes, it did. Justice Kennedy's concurrence is basically, this is not the way I would have gone with the case. If you wanted my decision to go the other way, this is what you needed to show me. In so many words, that's kind of what he talks about. At the end of the day, the court ruled that the U.S. Code, 8 U.S. Code 1182, very clearly gives the president plenary power. It very clearly says if the president finds that, fill in the blank, then he can ban people from coming into the country temporarily or permanently or whatever is best in the best interest of the national security of the United States. The argument then shifts to, well, as Justice Sotomayor puts in her dissent, there's no national security interest here. In essence, that's what she's saying. We've not been attacked by any of the people from these countries that have been banned. Where is the NAD? The president doesn't show any findings, is her argument, which, of course, is arguably untrue. I mean, he did show some findings, and the law doesn't specify exactly what those findings must be. It doesn't say you have to have 8 pages of this, 4 pages of that, 2 paragraphs about this, and oh, by the way, it has to be in triplicate black ink with carbon paper used. It doesn't say that. It just says if the president finds, which is essentially what Congress has been doing literally since the Brig Aurora back in the 1800-1801 era. When Congress first passed a law saying if the president finds that Great Britain and France are still impressing our sailors after a certain date, then he has plenary power to take action. And we grant him this. Ipso facto, go on your way. And that is what United States policy has been since then. When it comes to foreign affairs, when it comes to immigration, Congress has absolute oversight. The tradition for 200 years has been that while we have this Bill of Rights, it simply does not apply to people coming into the country who have not been officially allowed into the country yet. They may be under our jurisdiction. They may be functionally here, but they are not. They may be physically here, but they are not functionally here yet. And consequently, it has been the position of the United States and the Supreme Court since the early 1800s that the Bill of Rights doesn't apply. There's plenary power exercised by Congress, delegated to the president to do this. And while it may or may not be the right way to do it, while it may or may not be discriminatory, while it may or may not be in violation of the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, all the way out to the Eighth, it's irrelevant. We have made a practice for literally 200 years of not doing it that way. We have allowed ourselves plenary power to make rules for the admission of aliens to exclude those who possess those characteristics which Congress has forbidden. At various times in our history, that has been basically everybody in the world. At one point, we didn't let Asians in. At one point, we didn't let Jews in. At one point, we didn't let Eastern Europeans in. At one point, we didn't let the Irish in. And at no point did we ever sue anybody saying, well, this is unconstitutional. What we did was we elected new Congress people who changed the laws. Ta-da! If you read the court's opinion in this matter, which is, again, fairly, you know, straightforward, it is almost disturbingly straightforward. I got to be honest with you. We're going to talk about this in just a moment. Chief Justice Roberts delivers the opinion. It is basically that. Look, this is what the law says. The law says if the president finds, then that. If then that or else. Congress has the power to do this constitutionally, and they have delegated that power through the passage of laws to the president of the United States. And while the president of the United States may be interpreted as being anti-Muslim, consequently, because we don't apply the Bill of Rights in these cases and never have, and quite frankly, we probably never want to, QED, it stands. It's constitutional. It is legal. It is de facto this. But the ruling is written. It's written in a way that comes across as almost, well, my hands are tied. Look, the law says he can do it. What do you want me to do about it? Your argument is that the Bill of Rights should apply, but we have 200 years of precedent, and you know this, that says that it doesn't apply in this case, and this is the way we have always done this. And we're not going to overturn that. We're not going to take it upon our shoulders and say 200 years of the way we have, the process by which we have done things should be undone because you don't like this guy. Some of the things you have to keep in mind that the Supreme Court has to consider is, what if this wasn't Trump? What if this was Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton or Jimmy Carter or, I don't know, pick a Gavin Newsom who wrote this? Would we be having this same argument from you at this point about this same thing? Or would you want that plenary power? See, if we take the plenary power away from the president and effectively away from Congress, because now what we're saying is Congress can't make these laws anymore. It's not just Trump that's not going to be able to do it. It's everybody from now on. Did you think about that? Is kind of the question. And then you throw in Justice Kennedy's concurrence, which is kind of like, well, you know, you guys, if you wanted that result, you should have argued something differently. You should have handled your case differently. And you almost get this feeling, this overwhelming feeling that the Supreme Court actually doesn't like this. They don't like the travel ban. They may not even like Trump, the way it kind of reads. It's kind of reading into it, kind of reading between the lines, kind of reading sideways, I suppose, or maybe with a strobe light. but the five who upheld this clearly are going by the absolute letter, right down to the lowest jot and tittle of the law. And the arguments that are made by the dissenters are actually, they're not bad arguments, folks. They really aren't. If we were willing to take the power away from Congress that's in the Constitution and then delegate it to the president and hand it to the courts. To me, that's what the court said today, is we're not willing to do that. We're not willing to assume for ourselves constitutional authorities and powers, which are clearly delegated to Congress and then to the president. We're not willing to do that. But the arguments are, well, wait a minute. This is anti-Muslim. Clearly it is because of the president's tweets. And we've talked about this in the past. We've talked about the president needs to just shut up on Twitter. He just, look, I will tell you, I did not vote for Donald Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary. Did not vote for Donald Trump. But nothing is making me more likely to vote for Trump than some of the behavior of Democrat politicians and leftist people who are absolutely insane in their screaming and yelling and ranting and raving. I love seeing people spun up like that. And if this is going to spin you up more, count me in. I'll vote for him. Because I'm smart enough to realize that one president really can't change that much. Like it or not, the president doesn't change the price of gas at your pump. He just doesn't. So at the end of the day, where this plenary power is concerned, this constitutional power is concerned, the court doesn't want to take it away, but some of the dissenters seem to want to. They seem to want to take it upon themselves to say, we decide who has what powers. And I think that's wrong. However, they did make some valid points, which was, look, there is clear Muslim animus here. Justice Breyer even cites Masterpiece Cake in his dissent. This was a ruling, what, 2 weeks ago? He's already citing it in his dissent, where he talks about the fact that the reason this guy was essentially allowed to get away with discriminatory behavior was because the government denigrated his religion, i.e. they showed animus towards his faith. Now, they did so in a very, very outrageous way. Are Trump's statements about Muslims any less outrageous? Are they any less? Do they demonstrate any less animus? And so Breyer's argument is, you let this guy get away with it because of the government's animus. The president is the government. He's showing animus. Doesn't this violate the First Amendment? And of course, the only counter argument to that is we don't apply the First Amendment. We never have applied the First Amendment. We've never applied any of the Bill of Rights on these immigration issues. We don't do that. Whether that's right or wrong is an argument for another day. But for 200 plus years, that has been the position of Congress, the position of the courts, and the position of the president. You may not like it, but that's the way it's been. And I submit to you that even if you don't like it, you really don't want it changed. Because once you change it because you don't like this president, guess what? The president you do like doesn't get that power back. It's gone. And I'm pretty sure that the Democrat Party, which I consider to be power mad and power hungry, that's my opinion, take it for what it's worth, doesn't want to give up any power. And so consequently, if you take it away from the Republican, you have to take it away from the Democrat too. And that's essentially what Justice Kennedy is saying is, look, you didn't make the right argument. And if we rule for you, you're going to screw everything up. You're not considering the long-term consequences. You're not considering the long-term effects. You're taking a 90-day ban about from people from countries that, don't like us very much. that has been done in the past, Carter, Reagan, others as well, and you're turning this little molehill, this little 90-day molehill, into a mountain of taking constitutional authority away from Congress. And the whole thing reads, the entire opinion written by Justice Roberts reads, as Pat the lawyer pointed this out, and he's right, it reads like, well, we're doing this because we're protecting what is. If you don't like the law, then there's a process by which you change the law. If you don't like the fact that we do it this way, there is a process by which we change it. The court declined the invitations to go into this, you know, First Amendment stuff. They basically reaffirmed the plenary power doctrine when it comes to the admission of aliens. This is the doctrine we have always had. We have always understood it to be this way. Always. Since there was a Supreme Court, since there was a Congress, since there was a president, this is how we have understood this. Plenary power. Congress has plenary power over admission of aliens. They have passed laws and delegated that authority to the president. If the president finds that, blah, 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 then he can ban them. Congress and the president, to the extent that Congress delegates some power to the president, as historically it often has, shake your head, gets to decide who comes into the country with no substantial scrutiny under the Bill of Rights by the courts. You can disagree with this or you can agree with it. But that is what the court decided. That is what the court said. That is what the court upheld. If you don't like it, agree with the president's ban. But the way you change that is not in front of the United States Supreme Court. It's at the ballot box. You don't like what's going on, elect new people. It's half past. Got to take a break. Back right after this.
Hi, I'd like to apply for a student loan.
Wonderful. We just need to verify that you've registered with Selective Service.
But I haven't registered.
Oh.
Hi, I'd like to sign up for a job training program.
Fantastic. This program is great for learning the skills that help you get a good job. Let's just check to make sure you've registered with Selective Service.
Well, I haven't registered.
Oh.
Thank you for letting me interview for this government job. I'm really excited about working here.
Well, yes, but your records indicate that you're not registered with Selective Service. I'm sorry.
Young men who fail to register with Selective Service can find a lot of doors closed to them. The law requires that all men register with Selective Service within 30 days of their 18th birthday. If you don't, you lose your right to receive student loans and job training, and you're shut out of federal employment. Don't close the doors to your future. Register with Selective Service online at www.sss.gov or at your post office.
Kathy Ireland for the Will Rogers Institute.
Are you worried that your kids aren't spending enough time being physically active? The best fitness is family activity. Ride bikes, play soccer, or just take a walk through the neighborhood. The important thing is to get your children moving with you. For more information on family activities and fitness, call the Will Rogers Institute.
Call toll-free 877-957-7575 or visit wrinstitute.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Being around too much loud noise like a leaf blower or rock concert can cause permanent hearing loss. And once it's gone, you can't get it back. Hearing loss is the third most common chronic health condition in the U.S. Almost twice as many people report hearing loss as diabetes or cancer. The louder a sound is, and the longer you're exposed to it, the more likely it will damage your hearing. Repeated exposure to noise can cause stress, anxiety, depression, high blood pressure, heart disease, and many other problems. Hearing loss from loud noise at home and in the community can be prevented. Avoid noisy places. Use earplugs, protective earmuffs, or noise-canceling headphones when near loud noises. Keep the volume down when watching TV or listening to music and using earbuds or headphones. Get your hearing checked and ask your healthcare provider how to protect your hearing from noise. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vital signs.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
One of the things I hate is not having time for show prep. So I'm trying to run two cases here. The Supreme Court's been busy this morning, and the show prep that I did all last night went out the window because of this. So all that stuff I said about Justice Kennedy's argument, that you made the wrong argument, he did make that argument. He did, in fact, say those things just about the other case. Sorry. That's on the second case that we're going to talk about, not the first case. I have both of them up here on my screen. So it's kind of, I don't know, it gets confusing sometimes. And again, I apologize for that deeply, but you know, it happens. He did make the argument. He just didn't make it in that case. Story still applies. He still told them you didn't argue the right things. But, you know, just a different case. And well, everything else still applies. I mean, that's what the court ruled, which was if you don't like the law, then get people in here to change the law rather than turning over 200 years of history. Sorry. The way we've done it. Now there are a couple of other jewels, I guess, in this ruling. Number one, the court actually addressed the issue about whether or not campaign statements can, in fact, be interpreted as intentions. But the heart of the matter was that on the campaign, the president said he was going to ban Muslims. Then he issues a travel ban that he says doesn't ban Muslims. It bans people from those countries. And then the argument that the court actually said this is extrinsic evidence and it can, in fact, be considered as to whether or not the intention of this thing is a Muslim ban. Is it evidence of unconstitutional discrimination or what? So that's interesting, because now that the court has said that, do you think Donald Trump is a different kind of political animal? I don't know that any other politician would have ever said that certainly no politician would have said it. They would never have said, we're going to ban Muslims. Only somebody who, and Donald Trump is a politician, but only somebody who really doesn't care would say something like that. And so most politicians would have said, at the end of the day, after careful consideration from all stakeholders, we have to be careful to be inclusive in our decision-making process, which ensures that anyone who is, you know, intentionally discriminated against by these policies meets strict criteria determined in, you know, over the course of time, and Rome wasn't built in a day. That's what they would have said. Trump just said, we're going to ban Muslims. And so the court has said this can be considered in the future. So now, in the future of political campaigns, you may see a whole lot less Trumpisms. You may see a whole lot less people not willing to really say things that they mean. Which, of course, politicians don't do anyway. They almost never say what they mean. They always say what they think you want to hear. In a way, this is kind of a, you know, this whole ruling has this feeling of, we don't really like it either. We don't like this president either. But the law says, and if we take this away from him, we're taking it away from everybody, and we don't want to do that. So if you don't like what he's doing, vote for somebody else. If you don't like the fact that Congress has allowed him to do this, then vote for somebody else. Change the law. Washing our hands. Pontius Pilate of the whole thing. So that's in there. The second thing, which is more interesting, and I missed this on the initial reading. I read through this, but somehow or another, and again, I was reading it, you know, pretty quickly. How many of you realize that this ruling overturns a major United States Supreme Court ruling? Want to take a guess what it is? Anybody in the chat room want to guess? This ruling, Trump v. Hawaii, actually overturns a major United States Supreme Court ruling. Korematsu. It overturns Korematsu. Yep. Absolutely. Korematsu, for those of you who aren't familiar with that, was the ruling that the internment of Japanese American citizens, let's rephrase that, American citizens of Japanese descent being interred during the Second World War was constitutional. It was a horrible decision, and this ruling actually overturns that decision. It was one of the few decisions that hadn't been overturned. But that one, it does do that. And I think that's worth celebrating. However, after saying that they were essentially turning that over, today's decision notes that, quote, Korematsu was gravely wrong the day it was decided, has been overruled in the court of history, and to be clear, has no place in law under the Constitution. But then they go on to say Korematsu has nothing to do with this case. Okay. It may not. I don't know. This is one of those things where, number one, I was saying to Pat this morning, I got to go back and listen to the oral arguments on this because I don't remember specifically the arguments that were made. But number two, this is going to take some time to digest. This is one of those rulings that people are screaming about. Congress people are calling it, you know, Dred Scott, and the ACLU is screeching and all that. I don't think people are considering the long-term implications of getting what they want. This is instant gratification society. We don't like Trump. We don't like his travel ban. And so we want it overturned without ever really understanding what overturning that would mean. And I think if you take the time to think about what it would mean long-term, and even into the past, you might say to yourself, well, there you have it. Almost like the Supreme Court, hey, you elected this, you voted for this Congress, you voted for this president, so tough bananas. You don't like it, put somebody else in office. Tell Congress to change the law. There's nothing that says to Congress, there's nothing that says to Congress today. And I would submit to you that there are plenty of Republicans in Congress, probably in the leadership, who don't like Donald Trump, who think that this travel ban is hurting them. Well, change the law. Change the law to make requirements that are much more clear, less plenary in their broadness, if the president finds that. Make that, if the president finds, much, much more narrow. make it so that there has to be a congressional approval. If the president finds, he can recommend to us, and when on a voice vote, we can say yay or nay. All of those things could be done today. Congress could do that. Let's see. Well, they probably couldn't do it today because it's already 2 o'clock in the afternoon out there. I'm sure they're at lunch or gone for the day, but they could certainly have that done by the end of the week if they really wanted to. If enough people started calling them and saying, you know, instead of worrying about whether or not you should be sleeping on your couches or not, which is what we were going to talk about today, maybe you ought to worry about this. Maybe you ought to be doing something about this instead of, I don't know, voting for National Butterfly Week or whatever. Any number of things you could say to all of those things. I have the oral arguments. I downloaded them when they had them. Look, sometimes I have better things to do for an hour. I know it sounds bizarre, but it's true. Sometimes I do. Anyway, those are the other two little gems that came out of that ruling. We can, in fact, take into account your statements made via social media, hello, as to what your intent is, and Korematsu is overturned. A little late, but we finally get that. They also reversed a lower court decision upholding a California law requiring that anti-abortion crisis pregnancy centers more fully disclose what they are. That's that more fully disclose what they are thing that I think that's got people. The case pitted the right to know against the right of free speech. On one side, self-identified crisis pregnancy centers which seek to prevent abortions. And on the other side, the state of California, which enacted a law to ensure that these centers do not intentionally or unintentionally, quote unquote, mislead the women who walk through their doors. Again, that's kind of broad. 5-4 ruling, the court said the centers are likely to succeed in their claim that the law violates the First Amendment. Overturns an earlier decision by the Ninth Circuit Court upholding the law, saying, hey, you guys reconsider it. Justice Thomas wrote the majority's opinion, said the law targets speakers, not speech, and imposes an unduly burdensome disclosure requirement that would chill their protected speech. Those who wrote the law said that it was nothing more than truth in advertising, but the anti-abortion center saw the law as unconstitutional, compelling them to make speech that turns them into mouthpieces for government message they disagree with. Abortion. Here's the understatement of the day. Passions run high when it comes to abortion. Add the fact that most anti-abortion pregnancy centers have a firm Christian perspective, and you get a nice volatile mix. 2015, California passed what was known as the FACT Act, Freedom, Accountability, Comprehensive Care, and Transparency. Again, you do away with the difficult bit in the title. The title is all the voters are going to read. The title is all the public is going to read. And I mean, who could be against freedom, accountability, comprehensive care, and transparency? Who could be possibly against that? Right? California? Who could possibly be against water storage bonds? Right? Yeah. Nobody could be against that. Yeah, just the trouble starts when you read past that. The impetus was that pregnancy centers who opposed abortion were using deceptive practices. I don't really know what those deceptive practices would be. Is there anybody in the world that doesn't know that an abortion clinic is an abortion clinic? And that a Christian center is going to oppose that? I'm hard-pressed to believe that. What deceptive practices would they be using? Second, concern that lower-income women in particular weren't aware of the free pregnancy-related services California provides. I reject that outright. From perinatal to delivery care to birth control and abortion. Yeah, I've watched as two of my teenage daughters went through the California high school system. I'm pretty sure they're aware of that. The FACT Act required that unlicensed crisis pregnancy center to post a sign or otherwise disclose to their clients in writing that the center is not a licensed medical care facility. And it has no licensed medical provider supervising the provision of services. Disclosure required and extended to advertising, which anti-abortion pregnancy centers objected to as an attempt to drown out their message. Second provision of law dealt with licensed centers, requiring centers that do not provide a full range of reproductive care, which is kind of a misnomer, including services covered by Medicaid, post a sign that says that the state provides free or low-cost access to prenatal care, birth control, and other reproductive care, including abortion. In recent years, the number of pregnancy centers that counsel against abortion have dramatically increased. Today, there are 2,700 of them around countries, which this says is more than three times the number of clinics that provide abortions. Again, I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it ain't. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I find it difficult to believe that somebody who wants an abortion can't find one. Given the history, not just of the United States, but of the entire world, I find it difficult to believe that people who want an abortion can't find it. Why do I need to force people to tell people who don't believe in abortion to tell people that they can get an abortion? That seems to me to be a pretty clear violation of the First Amendment. You're compelling speech. It's not a question of we don't like their speech. You're compelling them to say something they don't want to say. Again, this is where Justice Kennedy argued that had you argued a different way, perhaps we would have gone with you, but you did not. You failed to make the argument that you should have been making. And consequently, I side with the majority, 5-4, saying that this law probably violates the First Amendment, so you might want to reconsider it, Ninth Circuit Court. They didn't really decide per se that it was a violation. What they said was they're likely to succeed if they were to sue you on this basis. So, Ninth Circuit Court, take this back and think about it some more. Reconsider it. Rethink this, which is what they did yesterday with Arlene's Flowers, too. Arlene's Flowers, by the way, was the Washington State case about the florist who wouldn't provide flowers for gay marriage. They sent it back saying, we don't need to see this. You need to reconsider this in light of the decision we made in Masterpiece. If the government was showing religious animosity, then overturn it. If not, then let it stand. Ta-da. We don't need to waste our precious time with this again because we've got other things to consider. We've got other things to argue. We've got vacations coming up. We have potential retirements coming up. Rumor is Justice Kennedy is going to retire soon. As I mentioned a few weeks ago, we've got senior Republican senators who are saying to any Supreme Court justice, if you're thinking about retiring it, do it now. To which, of course, Justice Ginsburg said, she ain't going anywhere. But if Thomas or Kennedy or Alito or Roberts or any of these other guys are thinking about retiring, he wants them to do it now since they have the ability to do that, you know, theoretically, at least until December, they can get people in there. So they want that to do that. Which brings us around to, let's see, I haven't been keeping up with the chat room here. Buster wants to know Is it really up to Justice Sotomayor to decide what is national security? I mean, honest question, no snark. I think there's a lot of people asking that same question. I really do. When it comes to this decision in Hawaii v. Trump. And I'm going to say this. I don't mean it to be snarky. I don't mean it to be argumentative. I mean it to be contemplative. One of the things that scares me the most about our country today. And I don't look, Bush did it. Obama did it. And now Trump's doing it. It doesn't matter. This isn't a Bush thing. It's not an Obama thing. It's not a Trump thing. It's not a race. It's national security. So we're just going to do it. We're not going to ask any questions. We're not going to have any debate. We're not going to have any discussion. And so is it the court's place? Is it the court's place to question that? Absolutely. It is. I applaud her for bringing that up because, again, at some point, we're going to have to start asking the question, what isn't national security anymore? For God's sakes, our government is spying on us. We know about it, and that's their answer to it. We know that they're doing it. We know that it's against our Bill of Rights. We know we don't want them doing it. We know Congress has said no, and they turn around and throw that in our face. Well, national security. We're keeping people safe from the terrorists. We're keeping people safe from whatever. More and more and more over the last 20 years, we find this national security blanket being thrown over things. Now, again, I'm a nuclear submariner, folks. I'm a fire control technician, ballistic missile, and a targeting expert. Believe me, I understand the concept of what is secret, what's top secret, what's top secret ESI, what's confidential. I understand these things innately. But we're getting to the point where everything now has become national security. Everything that the government wants to do that they don't want you questioning has become national security. And if we're not going to question it, well, maybe the Supreme Court should. Maybe the Supreme Court should have said, hey, you say this is for national security, but why? What about this is for national security? Tariffs are for national security. Laws are being passed for national security. Audits are being held for national security. Everything is being turned into national security this, national security that. And it scares the daylights out of me. Because literally, you can do anything for national security. There was a time in this country, the United States of America, where people were thrown into jail because they disagreed with the government, and the government saw that as a national security issue. They threw people into jail during World War I for opposing this war. This war that was meant to preserve democracy. And if democracy can't handle a couple of people complaining about the war, then it's not really a democracy, is it? During the Civil War, we threw people into jail. In the late 1790s, Congress passed a law saying it's against the rules to disagree with the government and express that. And oh, by the way, we're going to pack the court with judges who agree with us. And we're going to be throwing people into jail. This is, you know, within the generation after the passage of the Bill of Rights. We're going to throw people into jail for disagreeing with the government. What? It frightens me when people start using national security as an excuse for doing something. Okay, I get it. We don't want to telegraph our moves to the enemy, whoever that is. And I understand that. But there comes a time when what we're doing maybe needs to be exposed. Maybe it needs to have a national debate. Do you really think we'd be on the ground in a war in Syria if we'd have had a national debate about it? Do you think we'd still have people getting killed in Afghanistan if we'd have had a national debate about it? Do you think we'd have people on the ground in Mali if the Congress of the United States and the people of the United States actually knew that? Maybe there's a reason to be there. Maybe there isn't. Perhaps there is, but how hard is it to explain to the American people that there's a reason that we need to be there rather than just saying, well, it's national security? How hard is it to say to American people, you're going to have to pay more for that because of national security, but here's the real reason why? Yeah, I think it's okay for the court to bring that up. I really do. I wish more of them had. I wish a lot more people would bring it up every day. I wish Congress, instead of worrying about whether or not they should pass a law, and I'm not making this up, whether the Congress should pass a law making it illegal for Congress people to sleep on the couches in their office. Yeah, it's been introduced. It's being considered. It's being debated. It's being discussed in committee. A law about couches. Maybe they ought to be banging the drum about, what are we doing about this? Why are we doing this? Is this really what we want to do? We need a lot more discussion in this country about what is and what is not national security. And again, I believe in security. I believe in, you know, you don't talk about things that you shouldn't be talking about. But I don't think policy falls into that category. I really don't. I don't think the question of whether or not we should be fighting a war in Syria, fighting a war in Mali, fighting a war in, I don't think those are national security issues in the sense of nobody should know about it. If banning Muslims is national security, don't you think you should be able to tell me why? Because, you know, again, we give them plenary power because we trust them with it. But if we don't question them about things, trust is going to be abused. And it certainly is being abused right now, I would say. No, I wish more people would ask about it. I got to get running. So maybe the show that we had for today we'll do tomorrow. But at the end of the day, the theme is the same, which is if you don't like the laws, elect other people. It's our job, not theirs. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Stay tuned. Tim Preuss coming up next, and I'll be back tomorrow. Probably for a Wednesday episode of The Dave Bowman Show right here. Check us out meantime online at thedavebowmanshow.com or podcast99.org, where you can find all the shows that we have for you. On my site, The Dave Bowman Show is just mine. So go to Podcast 99 if you want to get everybody else's as well. Have a great day, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow right here, 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific time for The Dave Bowman Show.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.